They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Welcome back. At long last, we're back like we never left. Tragically, moving season affects us all, or those of us who have to move, so it causes us sometimes to miss podcasts, so I apologize for that, but we're back. We're ready to discuss the things. Elliot, the biggest, probably the biggest thing, is Avatar 3 has a trailer. Elliot, I saw this. I'm on the record as an Avatar hater. This trailer is amazing. It's so good. I'm so convinced this Avatar is going to be better than those last two. It's going to be amazing. Elliot, what were your thoughts on the Avatar 3 trailer?
Are you being serious?
No, I'm not being... It looked terrible, bro. It looked awful.
Wow, your delivery was too convincing. I was like, whoa, what? I didn't get that at all.
Thank you. I've been working on that bit since I saw the trailer and was like, wow, the exact same nonsense we've seen for 6 hours.
It's funny the different reactions you have to the same basic premise. Because we talked about how Matt Reeves is taking a while for The Batman that came out the same year as Avatar The Way of Water. And we're thinking, oh, that's fine. Matt Reeves, take your time. And this movie has not taken nearly as long to make, but still, when I hear that James Cameron is taking his time on a movie, my reaction is, somebody stop him! We can't just stand by and let this happen! I was deeply, deeply unimpressed by this trailer. And I have no intentions of watching this movie. Unless Nathan decides we're going to review it, then I guess.
Well, I've already told people that if they pay for our tickets, at least I'm willing to go to a movie if someone else pays for me to go. I don't think I would pay to go to Avatar 3. As well as, I mean, I've already made fun of this movie for looking like virtually the same exact story that we just got in Avatar 2. But James Cameron is spending so much time on, like, at this time there's going to be an evil Na'vi tribe. I'm like, dude, this is some kids television show nonsense that you're pulling on us. Like, you're making a series that operates like a TV show, but it takes 6 years in between releases and lasts for 3 hours long. This is like Samurai Jack or something, where people are saying this is... like, we're really innovating because we have this new thing. And you're like, great, that'll be good for 30 minutes. And then I'm going to have to sit through 2.5 more hours of it. I just, good grief, yeah. Anyway, that's the biggest news. Other than that, Fantastic Four is out. It's supposedly very good. I haven't gotten a chance to see it. I am very much wanting to see it, though. I think it looks... I've said from the beginning that I think it looks better than previous MCU movies. And ever since Kevin Feige said we're focusing on quality, causing all of us to wonder what on earth were you focusing on for the couple of years since, you know, like Endgame. But they're focusing on quality now. They're trying to deliver good movies as a movie studio should. So I'm willing to give them a chance. The only other big news, and Elliot, I'm just going to talk about this briefly because you don't care at all. Your reaction is going to be, I don't care, is we've been having, over the last couple of weeks, the film festivals have been announcing their lineups. And just in case we haven't talked about any of these movies before, the movies that I am excited for that are going to be getting premieres in the coming months and we'll finally be able to see reviews and notices for these things is... as I mentioned in our recap of last year, No Other Choice, the new movie from Park Chan Wook looks amazing. Very excited for it. Richard Linklater has two movies coming out this year. Linklater fans are just, you know, fed like no one else. Hamnet, which is the next movie from Chloe Zhao, following the tepidly received Eternals for Marvel. She's back to doing art house stuff. I read the book this movie is based on. I thought it was really great. So, very excited for that movie.
First of all, I'm pretty sure it's pronounced Zhao. Second of all, I thought you weren't particularly fond of Nomadland.
I'm not, but I think the book is good. And I genuinely did like Eternals a fair amount. I'm in the minority who thinks it's really neat.
Okay.
I'm excited for that. I'm trying to think if there's any other... obviously, Rian Johnson's new Knives Out movie is getting a release. I think those are the biggest... we've already talked about it, so there's no need to talk about it anymore. Elliot, I think you could obviously say something if you're interested in saying it, but you've finally seen Superman, so you can share your thoughts on Superman with our audience, finally.
Yeah, I liked Superman. I thought it was by no means perfect. And no spoilers, by the way. If you haven't seen it and you're still planning on seeing it, which seems unlikely at this point, but still. Just that I thought that the intro was exposition heavy and the climax not particularly interesting. But there's a lot to like about this movie. I think that David Cornsweet is a great Superman. Nicholas Holt, absolutely the standout for me as Lex Luthor. And Lex Luthor as a character, I thought that they nailed him. I have a pretty limited knowledge of comics, especially comics that do not prominently feature Batman. So maybe I'm completely off and this Lex Luthor is just a total mess, but to me, I thought he was fantastic. And yeah, dude, when Superman's just doing his thing, saving lives, giving people little pep talks, how can you not smile? How can you see that and not just have a nice grin on your face? And frankly, I know I've been hedging my bets this entire time, saying that James Gunn has, right, he's made a believer out of others, but I was withholding judgment and he was making money, but still, I'm not going to say anything. James Gunn, you proved me wrong. I didn't think you could pull it off. And again, it's not a perfect movie, but it was enough for me. And it was enough, frankly, to get me a little bit excited about what's coming next for DC movies.
Nice. Yeah. Speaking of DC movies, though, unless you have anything else to banter about.
Well, there's a trailer for Zootopia 2. I don't know if you saw that.
I did not watch it.
Missed opportunity to not call it Zootopia.
Holy cow. don't let this man cook.
What?
Nothing. Just some kid lingo for you.
So you said you didn't see it? Didn't see the trailer?
No.
Oh, well, that's fine. It's not, or I didn't think it was particularly compelling. I'm pretty sure that Lydia, the former Magellan sibling, mm-hmm. now Cowan's sibling, that the first Zootopia is like her favorite movie ever. Yeah. So maybe we should have had a little bit of a call-in where she could give her thoughts on this trailer. But for all of you Zootopia people out there, there it is. Eat well.
All right. Well, anyway, back to DC. You ruined my segue now by talking about Zootopia.
You asked me if I had anything else to say.
With the release of this new James Gunn Superman movie, everyone is taking turns to look back on the most recent other Superman movie, which is, of course, Zack Snyder's Man of Steel. They're looking back on it. Some people very critically, some people just going crazy. Elliot, I don't know if you've seen the tweet where someone, a news outlet was announcing that.
No. Okay. The answer is no. I don't, I'm not on Twitter.
A news outlet was announcing that Superman is set to pass Man of Steel in box office receipts. And someone who I can only assume is a reasonable fan of Zack Snyder's work and filmography responded by saying that it was unfair to compare the two box offices, not because of inflation, but because there's so many more people in the world now than when Man of Steel came out. And so, of course, it didn't make as much money. There was fewer people to go to the film.
Oh, of course. I didn't even think about that. That's a good point.
So anyway, some people are going back to Man of Steel to praise it to high heaven. Some people love this version of Superman and this version of the DC Universe. And I have not seen Man of Steel since I first watched it way back in, like, 2015 before Batman v Superman and Justice League and all of Snyder's somewhat arrested version of the DC Universe. So I thought, what better time to revisit it? Is it an affront to... I feel like I'm seeing a lot of people who love the James Gunn Superman, and they're going back to just trash this Henry Cavill version, that it doesn't understand the character, that it's completely out of step with everything that Superman represents. And I just wanted to go back to the movie and, you know, is it that bad? Is it that far afield? And like you already mentioned, Elliot, I'm not a Superman aficionado. I have only seen the first Christopher Reeves movie. I haven't even seen...
I said that about me, not about you.
Well, it's everything that's true for you is true for me, Elliot. We've had the same exact experience. But yeah, I've probably read even fewer comic books than you, and obviously even fewer comic books that involve Superman than you. So my understanding is largely informed by animated shows, by other things I've gotten. So, you know, take all of my opinions about who Superman should be with a grain of salt here in this episode. But Elliot, let's get started with this thing. Let's dive in, per se. You know, let's just start with, you know, what are your opening thoughts on this version of Superman, the Man of Steel?
Well, first of all, I want to say I'm right. I do have the exact same experience of you in regards to this movie, because this is also the first time I'm watching it since that fateful night when we rented it. I don't think Mom was there, but Lydia was there this time. Dad just wanted to watch it.
Yeah.
And we watched it, I don't know, it was pretty late at night, and it kind of scared me. I didn't really like it. I was a lightweight back then, unlike now. And I just never really felt compelled to go back and revisit it. Although I have to say, just on a personal note, rewatching Man of Steel has been very transportive for me, because it has just whisked me back to this time when I was so in to DC Comics, right? Like, this was when I was starting my collection of Batman comics. My friend Cody, he was really into DC stuff, and he would lend me his comics. So I got from him, like, Blackest Night and Crisis on Infinite Earths and all that kind of stuff. And just how excited I was by it all. Like, dude, I loved Batman v Superman. As a 15-year-old boy, that's a movie by 15-year-old boys for 15-year-old boys.
It's so true.
And so, yeah, it's been strangely nostalgic to revisit all this, and also really interesting to walk among the ruins of an abandoned cinematic universe, right?
Yeah.
Because this movie is basically like those massive infrastructure projects in China that they made and then for one reason or another just kind of stopped. So they've got, like, right? Huge apartment buildings and shopping districts and all this kind of stuff prepared for people who never arrived. And that's kind of how I felt watching this movie. And then that prompted a little bit of going back and reading stuff about this movie and Batman v Superman and Wonder Woman and Justice League and the Snyder Cut. Holy cow. And so, yeah, we are the traveler from a long lost land, from the poem Ozymandias, talking about Visage half shrunk in the sand. I'm probably butchering that. It's been a while since I've read Ozymandias. But yeah, I just wanted to say that it was a very interesting experience for me. And with all that out of the way, because everyone was really interested in that, I have to say this movie's not very good. I didn't hate it by any means, and it's got its moments. There's some stuff that I enjoy here. Some decent action, good soundtrack by Hans Zimmer. But ultimately, I was pretty underwhelmed, and there's some parts about this movie that I think are just straight up bad. So I would say that it's south of mediocre, but it's not something that annoyed me or anything. And by the end, I was like, that happened. Also, I just want to say, Zack Snyder, the man himself, is kind of an outsized influence. Yeah, well, could be. I find Zack Snyder to be a very frustrating filmmaker, because I've seen from him the remake of Dawn of the Dead, which is okay. This movie, which I've just talked about. Batman v Superman, which I haven't rewatched in a long time. The Snyder Cut, which I remember thinking was actually pretty decent. And Army of Thieves. And with each of them have their own strengths and weaknesses, but ultimately I think that the man, he's just holding himself back. He needs to get out of his own way, because he kind of complicates his movies with overwrought, clunky scripts grounded in stilted dialogue, a focus on visual spectacle over narrative integrity, and giving interviews where he comes across as just the most pretentious tool. Like, dang, Snyder, you need to, just reel it in a little bit. I know that you said, I read the interview where you said that Batman v Superman is a heavily layered, deconstructivist take on superheroes. I'm here to tell you that's not true. There is, or maybe Zack Snyder knows more about Jacques Derrida than I do, but I could see no deconstructionist influences in that movie. And I'm interested, I know I'm sort of, I've sort of like taken the reins here and I apologize, but if after you give your opening thoughts, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on Zack Snyder as a director and your experience with him.
Well, I feel much the same way as you. I'm trying to beat the allegations that we're the same exact person and one of us is just an AI version of the other person's thoughts, but I agree. I don't think the movie is great. I did find the movie to be very nostalgic to rewatch, much like I have always said, I'm a bigger DC fan than I'm a Marvel fan, so the prospect of a DC universe on the same scale as a Marvel universe was so exciting to me. I remember being at Midwest Model United Nations when Snyder shared the first image of Jason Momoa as Aquaman, and I was just losing my mind because Aquaman's my favorite superhero. I was so just over the moon to see Aquaman in a movie, and rewatching this movie, yeah, like you said, just completely took me back to that point in my life, and I still feel that. I still think DC is way better than Marvel. I was very much enjoying the Superman movie just because it did have that note of, oh my goodness, I might see like the Justice, like a really good Justice League movie or something in my lifetime. That's so exciting. I might see, you know, Aquaman done really well. I might get to see Flash done really well. And those are the things that kind of excite me. But in general, this movie, as a movie, I don't think is great. And in terms of my thoughts on Zack Snyder, a lot of them are going to come up during the review. I think the biggest thing that I just so aggressively agree with you is him sacrificing coolness in action scenes over any amount of narrative cohesion or thematic material that he's trying to build up. I'll get more into this as we talk about this movie's version of Superman and whether or not I think it's a good depiction of Superman, but I think he is hindering himself by making his movies the way he does. Also, you didn't mention that you've seen Watchmen from Zack Snyder.
Oh, yeah. I didn't love Watchmen, but I love that graphic novel, so it was... I feel like I'm a bit of a purist when it comes to Watchmen, so I was going to be hard to please.
Yeah, I think Watchmen is one of the best books, period, full stop, not comic books, but books from the 20th century. That's my opinion, from someone who's read maybe like 50 books from the 20th century. It's my
opinion. There it is, yeah. Literary critics, put your pens down.
But I think it's so great. But yeah, I think in general, this movie is, we're seeing a lot of the best and worst of Zack Snyder. So I think I really want to start it with, is this Superman, this version of Superman, is it good? Is it in keeping with the character? I think the thing I see most often as a criticism is that it's not in keeping with the character, that it feels like a completely different type of character than what we're used to seeing Superman as. Is Henry Cavill any good? I want to start with Superman. That's where I want to start this review.
Well, I'm not terribly precious about Superman. I like Superman. Who doesn't like Superman? I don't have the same connection to the character that I do to Batman. So I feel like I am, as an outsider, I am more willing to see Superman as a character be stretched and bent to a certain extent than I would be someone like Batman. So just take that as an asterisk to the rest of what I'm about to say, because I'm sympathetic to doing new things. I'm always sympathetic to someone who goes out and they're like, okay, Superman, he's been bright and cheerful and happy for most of his existence, on screen at least, and we want to do something different. That's fine, but you do have to do something different well in order for me to really like it. And I feel like this Superman is clearly more unsure of himself, more somber, more broody. And so, but the problem is that for me, he kind of just becomes generic in this movie. And he ends up occupying a murky middle ground between Superman as he's popularly imagined and just Batman, right? Like Christopher Nolan, in case you didn't know, had a pretty significant role in this movie. He's credited as story by Christopher Nolan on this movie, him and David S. Goyer. And Batman Begins also was very much in the conversation when this movie came out. Because this is, I think, either at the tail end of or right on the heels of Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy. And there were conversations about whether or not this was going to tie into that. And I think that influence did not serve the movie very well, because the conflicting interests, I guess what I'm saying is that they didn't go far enough, in my opinion, to really set this Superman apart from what we've seen before, because he's still, right, got the suit, the origins, Jor-El, or his little computer thing, says that he's supposed to be a symbol of hope, and Pa Kent says that he's supposed to just stand by and let people die, which is a little strange. But, yeah, he's also moody and he stares off into the middle distance and stuff. And so that kind of, it leaves him feeling very compromised to me, that he's too Superman-y to be considered anything radically new, but he's also too Batman-y to be enjoyed as that archetypical presentation of the character. And frankly, Superman, as a character, perhaps, but certainly in this movie, doesn't have the intensity of Batman. Certainly not Nolan's Batman. So yeah, I think that, like with the rest of the movie, not terrible, not very good.
Yeah, I think I'm in a pretty similar place to you, that this movie is going for something new, which I respect. And I can see the vision that all previous Superman movies and James Gunn's Superman movie pretty much arrive with Superman fully formed as a character that we know and love. That he's a Boy Scout, he's happy, he's a goody-two-shoes, he loves doing good in a very corny, sweet, old-fashioned sort of way.
Truth, justice, in the American way.
Exactly. And in this movie, I can kind of see the vision, right? That you would ask the question, most people don't start out that way. No one is born behaving in such a fashion. They have to kind of, over time, develop that philosophy of life. And Schneider and his creative team here, I think, is trying to kind of look at the wrestling that Superman might do in order to get to a place where he says, I'm going to be a symbol, I'm going to do good, I'm going to do good in this particularly old-fashioned and sincere way. And I think the issue is we don't get enough of that for it to really land. Like, there's not a point, even as the movie is trying to show Superman change, in the sense that over the course of the film, he does come out as Superman, he works with the humans, he makes comments about how he's, right, leaning into trusting people as opposed to being cynical towards people, and he's trying to do good. It doesn't really feel like his demeanor is changing very much. We never really get to see a classic Superman doing good and doing things. And I think this is where we get to the biggest issue, is that it feels as though all of the narrative construction and thematic ideas that Snyder has basically go flying out the window as soon as it's time to block out an action scene where Superman can be trying Superman can be trying as much as possible to do good in the world and help, and then as soon as it's time for him to fight anyone, something takes over and it just becomes about how many walls can he smash through and how many things can explode, which again, and I almost got whiplash going from James Gunn's Superman movie, right, where he is trying so hard at all times to save every possible person, that he's making sure giant monsters don't bump into buildings, he's making sure that every villain is taken to an isolated area or is taken to a place where they can't do harm to people. Superman's just chucking trucks at buildings in this movie. I mean, he doesn't seem to care at all. And it's just hard to believe that this is the Superman that we're trying to get to see, because in these fight scenes, he seems to have no regard for human life, or at least no regard for anything besides how can I beat into a pulp the person I'm currently fighting, which he doesn't even seem to be particularly good at, because, I mean, he beat Zod almost on a technicality, because Zod is, spoilers, but Zod is too busy doing some other nonsense to actually, has seemingly deprioritized fighting Superman and reprioritized killing people, which lets Superman get the upper hand. But I just think it's an interesting look. And there's a book that I love that's kind of like, in my opinion, a good version of this version of Superman, where Superman is talking about the difficulties that he has being Superman, and but he still does it in a way that's very sincere and old-fashioned. I can't remember. It's an actual book. I can't remember its name right now, but I remember really enjoying it as a kid.
I know exactly what you're talking about, because yeah, that's the one where Lex Luthor basically does Ozymandias' plan, yes, from Watchmen in the end.
Yeah. It's a great book. It also has one of my favorite Batman moments of all time, where Batman's explaining to someone why he's Batman, and it's just so great. But anyway, for this movie, I feel bad that I haven't mentioned, but Henry Cavill's doing an okay job. I think he's hamstrung by the fact that his version of Superman just has nothing charming or anything that would play into qualities that I think Henry Cavill has, as well as the fact that I think Superman has like 20 some lines in the whole movie. He barely speaks. A ton of this movie is him just wandering around stealing people's clothes.
Well, first of all, I just want to loop back really quick to touch on something you were saying about Zack Snyder's inability or unwillingness to carry through the themes and the conceits that he's playing with, because one of the things that almost drove me insane watching this movie last night was trying to figure out what precisely Pa Kent is worried about when it comes to Superman. Because one of the most maligned parts of the entire movie is Superman as a kid saves a bunch of people from drowning. He's on a school bus, right? And it goes into a river, and he uses his powers to get it out of the river. And he's like, Pa Kent disapproves of this, and Clark says, what was I supposed to do, let them all die? And Pa Kent says, maybe. And I was like, wow, dude, okay. that's interesting. But, well, first of all, I would just like to say, compromise. Save the people, and then don't just stand in the open door staring at people and letting them see you. Maybe swim to shore, right? And be like, oh, I can't believe I made it out, man. That was insane. Yeah, it's a miracle.
I saw Aquaman.
Yeah, exactly. Aquaman, a strange man in an orange and green suit saved me. I'm not seeing the zero-sum game here that Pa Kent is seeing. But also, Pa Kent is against Superman, or Clark at this point, revealing himself to the world. And I couldn't get a lock on what exactly he was worried about happening. Because at some times, and Nathan, please correct me if I'm wrong here, because sometimes I get the feeling that I'm just an idiot and I'm missing things that are obvious. But I got the sense sometimes that Pa Kent was worried about people hurting each other, that he was like, people are afraid of what they don't understand, and that's bad. And sometimes he was worried about how it would impact Clark, that Clark would feel rejected or something. And so that is, well, first of all, Nathan, did you get that sense? Am I wrong? What is he worried about?
No, I agree. The stuff with Pa Kent is very confusing. It's hard to figure out exactly what he wants Clark to do and what his perfect vision of Clark becoming Superman looks like, because he says so many times, like, you're destined for greatness and you're gonna change the world and you're gonna be so important. And then he also does say, yeah, maybe you should let some kids die or whatever. Which is, that's a crazy thing to say. I mean, it's a very similar conversation to the one Lois and Superman have in the new Superman movie, but I don't think Lois ever says, like, yeah, you should have just let people die. She's just saying the situation is more nuanced. And, yeah, it seems as though he's simultaneously concerned for Clark and the world, that he's concerned about what people would do in reaction to Superman emerging and us discovering that we're not alone in the universe. And he's worried about, yeah, just, it seems like he's worried about both of those things. He's probably just really stressed. I feel like if I found an alien that was then able to do miraculous things and still look like a human, that would take me a long time to grapple with all of the different things that fall out from this revelation.
Not me. I'll be right on it. I'll be in it.
Okay.
From day one. From minute one. Yeah, so that that's a problem for me because it complicates the stakes, the tension that is at the heart of the first entire half of this movie. And side note from the side note that I'm already on. The first hour of this movie is a remake of the first, like, 20 minutes of the Christopher Reeve Superman,
mm-hmm.
where they find their stuff on Krypton. General Zod gets banished into the Phantom Zone. Jor-El sends Kal-El to Earth. There, he's raised by the Kents. He has problems adjusting. Pa Kent dies. He goes to the Arctic and finds his father, or a recording of his father, and learns about himself, and then he reveals himself as Superman. But in that movie, it takes 20 minutes. In this movie, it takes an hour. So yeah, the whole first hour of this movie is predicated on the tension of should he or should he not reveal himself as Superman and start acting in the public eye. And again, I'm seeing compromises here, right? Like, maybe wear a mask, do it in secret. You've got options here. But also, I think what might have clarified what Pa Kent was worried about was any remote continuation of that tension in the next hour, because that question is dropped immediately after Superman reveals himself. Like, no one, there's no, like, riots, nobody's sent shooting nukes at the alien, nobody's hurting themselves, nobody's saying, like, oh, I hate this. Well, I guess, like, some people are kind of rejecting Superman, but it's like military guys who are naturally going to be suspicious. Or it's not even that they're rejecting him, it's that they're naturally suspicious, which makes complete sense. So the entire question of the first hour of this movie is resolved in the span of minutes and then never picked up again. I guess it's kind of picked up again in Batman v Superman, right? Where Superman is a controversial figure and he's kind of being rejected on, like, moral grounds or whatever by people. But it surely goes without saying that what happens in the sequel can do very little to salvage what happens in the first movie, or at least in my opinion, that's the way it is. And yeah, Henry Cavill, there are a few things in this world whose popularity I don't really understand. Nintendo, Star Wars, Henry Cavill. I don't understand it, man. Like, people love Henry Cavill, and I don't think he's a bad actor or anything. I've seen the funny interviews where he talks about building PCs and liking Warhammer and stuff, but as an actor, I just don't see it. Do you see it? Do you want him to be James Bond? I know there's a huge, like, groundswell of support for Henry Cavill as the next Bond. Can you see him in that role?
Kind of. I mean, certainly in a Bond that's similar to Daniel Craig. Not a Bond who's anything like all of the other people who've played James Bond. And yeah, I think he's all right. I've pretty much only seen him in this. And I feel like he just hasn't branched. He needs to do, like, be like Chris Evans and find some ways to be cast as the hunky jerk in talented auteurs films. And then I'll love him then. If he's in Celine Song's next movie, I'll be over the moon. That would be great casting. But anyway, I think to kind of move it away from just Superman, I do want to agree. Eventually, I'll get to positives for this movie, I swear. But I agree, the pacing of this movie is kind of suspect. It spends a long time on Krypton. The entire time we were on Krypton, I turned to my father, who I watched this with, and I was like, man, Zack Snyder really wants to make Star Wars. He really, really would love to make a Star Wars movie. And it's too bad that he got to make...
Yeah, good thing he never tried.
Yeah, I haven't seen Rebel Moon. I can't comment on its quality. But the sequence on Krypton is crazy. I don't understand why it is this way. The pacing of the movie is kind of suspect. It takes so long for the plot to finally kick into gear, and then it's kind of just an hour of Zack Snyder fight scenes until the end of the movie, which is, you know, a little suspect. Although, here, we're going to get to the positives now. The fight scenes...
Well, wait.
Can
I comment on Krypton?
Yeah, never mind. We're back to negatives.
Yeah, I don't think... I just don't think we needed all of it.
Yeah.
Like, I know it's a little unfair to compare it to that first Christopher Reeve movie because clearly they're trying to be different things, but it just gets it done in so... with so much less unnecessary exposition and a bunch of jargon that we're not going to understand for, like, at least 20 minutes of the movie, talking about codexes and planet harvesting and stuff like that. And I'm just going to take this moment to, in general, say that the acting in this movie is a bit strange, and it's not helped by one of Zack Snyder's... or... it's not helped by the script, which is a little stilted, or maybe a lot stilted. People just use weird words that don't really fit their character or the situation. Like Lois Lane says to Superman, "I sense you're not that kind of person." And it's just a strange word choice. Or it was to me. Maybe other mm-hmm. people think that it's a perfect word choice. But yeah, the acting... there were so many times where things were happening and that were supposed to be, or ostensibly were, big emotional payoffs. And my reaction to the acting was, yeah, wow, you seem really moved by this. The perfect example, I think, is when Superman gets to the ship in the Arctic and he finds Jor-El.
Yeah.
And he says, "I have so many questions. Where did I come from?" And I was like, dude, this is something that you've been looking for your entire life, right?
Yeah.
This is the culmination of one of the biggest questions, one of the most integral questions to your character. And your expression is like a guy who just discovered that he had an errant $20 bill in his pocket. Not that he's discovered his long lost father. So the acting at times reminded me of the prequels, right? Oof, where George Lucas is on set saying, like, "That was an interesting take. Let's dial it back. Do it more like you're a soulless AI. Let's try that. Let's go with that." I didn't appreciate that.
I think the one acting performance that I would exempt from this, and my favorite performance in the movie.
Wait, let me guess. I want to try and guess.
Okay.
Perry White.
No. Dang. That's not a bad guess. I mean, yeah, Lawrence Fishburne is all right as Perry White. He's the class. He's frustrated. He's angry at Lois. It's great.
Lawrence Fishburne does that very well. Anyway, go ahead.
No, it's Michael Shannon as Zod, as just
really
the most evil. Yeah, I just think he's such a great heinous person. He kind of plays the same type of person in The Shape of Water, which I want to say he was nominated for something for. But I think he just has a great Zod. I think he is a relatively believable villain. Certainly his original ambitions of he's trying to bring back Krypton, those are decent ambitions. Apparently he's a bit of like a racist or a eugenicist or something on Krypton, which is bad. People shouldn't be those things. But he, you could not call him unemotional. He is constantly screaming, and especially in the final battle sequence, I think he just really sells this unhinged end of the line. He has nothing left to fight for, Zod, and it's great. I think it's really good.
I'm gonna have to demur on that one.
How dare you?
I think the performance isn't terrible, but I think we might have a Mulla Ram situation on our hands here, people. where I did not really like Zod as a as an antagonist. I'm gonna call him the protagonist. The performance is fine, but he is introduced in that bloated opening, and right from the start, he's just a paper-thin, mustache-twirling villain who's like, yeah, I mean, being a eugenicist, that's one of the most cliche, one-dimensional motivations a villain can have. And if there was a dimension of sadness to him, of feeling like he lost something when Krypton was destroyed, or like he was friends at one point with Jor-El, I maybe it would have been better. But for me, he was always just, all I got from him was the hatred and the racial bigotry and the anger, and I didn't get that layer to him. So to me, I thought that he was a very poor, very flat antagonist. Who I just really was, I was not interested in him. And also, he's the classic, the hero but evil villain, right? He doesn't have his own special powers for Superman to get around. He's Superman but evil, which, I don't know, is not particularly interesting to me.
Well, we're all wrong sometimes, I guess. I'll just continue here praising things in the movie. Hans Zimmer's score is so good. Holy cow. I hadn't, and it could just be a part of that nostalgia that I was talking about at the beginning, but when I started hearing the, Superman theme, or at least Hans Zimmer's Superman theme, I was like, this is sick. This is really getting me to, and it perfectly fits with Zack Snyder, the way he films everything as, the most important, craziest thing you've ever seen in your life. It helps if you have the most dramatic, amazing music you could possibly have. I mean, it's very similar to the Interstellar soundtrack, where it just, everything you see, you're like, wow, this is a religious experience seeing this, which I'm sure Snyder would love if his movies were seen as religious experiences.
Oh my gosh, this cornfield.
Given how much he loves to do the Jesus pose and that
me so irrationally angry.
I don't even understand why Clark goes into the church. He doesn't strike me as a particularly religious person. I think Snyder just wanted the shot of him with Jesus on the stained glass as Superman contemplates sacrificing himself for mankind. Although I say that, and then I do think the priest gave decent advice, where he's like, well, sometimes it's a leap of faith, and then the trust comes after. I'm like, oh, that's pretty good advice. That's, that I would say that's very true, that sometimes you have to rely on faith. That does feel like a very Christian thing to say. So that got me back a little bit, but not enough to overcome how ridiculous that shot is. But anyway, I'm not supposed to be dissing the movie. I'm talking about, the score is amazing. The score is so good.
It's funny how the priest seems to immediately believe Clark. If you're a Catholic priest who takes confessionals, surely you get a couple people coming in there who are like, I'm the Zodiac Killer and I can't stand it anymore. Yeah. I have to confess. And you're like, Okay. Well, all right.
That's 12 Hail Marys.
Yeah, 12 Hail Marys and let's say a $50 donation.
Yeah.
Or maybe he doesn't believe him and he's just doing a really good job of being like, okay, well, I guess I gotta work with this. No, the Christ metaphors, golly, Ned, this is so annoying. Because Snyder does this all the time.
Yeah.
Where extremely powerful characters will do cross arms, or there'll be choral music, or, right, they'll be linked back to Jesus. And, first of all, apparently, Warner Brothers, as part of their marketing campaign for this movie, tried to heavily push it to the Christian demographic in America, going so far as to create sermons entitled Jesus, the Original Superhero, that pastors could give to their congregations. And I just want to say that is profoundly stupid and deeply crass. And the same thing could be said about this, because I don't understand what I'm supposed to take from it, right? That is it saying anything about Jesus or Superman? To my mind, it just seems to be saying that Superman is like Jesus. And that's not a metaphor or an analogy or an allegory. That's a simile, right? That is the most basic, uninteresting component of literary construction that you can aim for. And so, what are you doing, Snyder? What is this supposed to mean? It annoyed me. And again, yeah, the whole thing, that's just so, that's deeply, that borders on sacrilege, in my opinion.
All right, well,
the thing about creating sermons to promote your movie. If anyone did that, they should be defrocked.
Yeah,
if anyone took them up on that offer.
I went to church and my pastor started giving a sermon.
This sermon is brought to you by Warner Brothers.
I'm never entering that church again. That would be crazy. That's awful. I want to know if anyone took them up on the offer. Maybe someone was like, man, my notes are just not it today. Anyway.
Maybe they transitioned mid-sermon, like they detected the energy's flagging. They're like, oh man, this isn't good. You know what? Let's talk about superheroes.
Yeah.
No, I just want to say, I totally agree with you about the music. I think that this is a fantastic soundtrack. It's got so much energy to it in the fight scenes and Superman's theme. It's very simple. It's just like a doo-doo, doo-doo, doo-doo. But it works really well, and I'll say it. I've been listening to the soundtrack casually since last night.
Yeah.
And yeah, especially the fight scenes where the percussion is just going crazy. Yeah. It's hard not to get caught up in the music because the music is so kinetic and exciting that it can almost fool you into thinking that the movie you're watching is also kinetic and exciting, which it often isn't.
Well, I do think the fight scenes are the exception to that. And that's going to be the last thing that I can kind of unequivocally say is good about the movie, is that the fight scenes are great. They're frustrating for the reasons I've already mentioned, in the way that they kind of ignore everything else in service of how cool can we make Superman look. But I'll admit it, it makes Superman look very cool. The way the Kryptonians move, they're doing these like little zips between things, is sick. The final fight between Zod and Superman, I think, is a really good final battle. Probably one of the best. Like you already mentioned, it is just two people with the same powers punching each other, so it's not that interesting in terms of who's going to win. Obviously, Superman's going to win because he'll harness the power of good or something to beat the guy who has just as much strength as him.
Break his neck.
Yeah, well, that's what he does, but... I think it's a great fight scene, and it's probably one of the, I mean, I would say it's better than the similar fight scenes in James Gunn's Superman between people who can fly and punch people.
Stop reading my mind. Stop taking all of the things I'm going to say.
Okay, my bad, but, I think it's good. I mean, I was telling, again, my father that I think Snyder just needs to find a superhero where it doesn't matter if you make them look cool for at the sake of people dying. Like, he needs to do a Punisher movie or something. Like, he needs to stop doing movies where, like Superman, where Superman should be not focusing on being cool. He should be focusing on saving humans. And he shouldn't do Watchmen, where the point is that they're gross and lame and, like, bad at things. Obviously, if they look dope in the fight scenes, you're kind of kneecapping your point. He needs to do Punisher, where it's like, yeah, he walks in, he shoots everyone, he looks sick, and then he walks away. That would be perfect. I was trying to think of other superheroes. He probably Lobo. He could probably do a great Lobo movie. He just needs a superhero who is based around looking cool and killing people, and that not getting in the way of what he's trying to say thematically in the rest of the movie.
He needs a superhero who's like him. Simple. I agree wholeheartedly. I was going to say, dude, I had it all lined up. Like, I was going to have a hot take. I think this action scene in this movie is better than the action scenes in James Gunn's Superman. But you're right. I think they use their powers in a more interesting way than they do in Superman, where they're just kind of like, it's just basically fisticuffs. In this fight scene, right, they're all over the place because they have the power of flight. And so they're just zipping through the city at blinding speeds and smashing into each other. And yeah, it's a lot more kinetic and a lot more exciting. And there's just a lot more fun stuff. Like, I think Superman and Zod fighting so intensely that they end up in space, right? That is the kind of arena where Snyder needs to be working. Where people are hitting each other so hard that they end up in space. That is Snyder to a T, or an S. One moment that I really enjoyed is when Zod tries to hit Superman with a big steel girder, and Superman uses his heat vision to melt it before it can actually hit him. And that's a really creative, fun way of incorporating their powers into the fight beyond just them hitting each other, but it actually is very strong, so they go flying. And the shot, the very famous shot of Superman punching Zod, and Zod, like, flies, I don't know, 100 feet ahead of him, and Superman's on him again in, like, 5 seconds because he's flying, so he's just, like, punching him across the sky. It's a good shot. It's a very good shot.
Well, and also, I just want to jump in, that shot where he uses his heat vision, it's also helpful because it shows how much Superman is aware of the nuances of his powers in a way that Zod isn't. That Zod has had his powers for 2 days, and so he only ever uses his heat vision in, like, I'm just going to try and break stuff, and he's going on pure, I'm going to punch this guy. And it's clear that Clark has a better understanding, like in that moment where he's able to quickly and precisely use his heat vision to destroy the metal beam. So I think that's also a neat touch. Again, Snyder just goes Super Saiyan every time he has to do a fight scene. The opposite of Super Saiyan is what he goes when he's writing a dialogue scene.
Minor Saiyan? I don't know.
I haven't watched Dragon Ball.
Yeah, I also, when they're, the reason that Zod is using a steel girder as a weapon is because they're in a construction site, and Superman gets hit into a sign that says this site has been accident-free for 100 days, and he knocks it off, so it's zero. I actually thought that was pretty cute. I did wonder what the Kryptonians' powers were and how they relate to their atmosphere. Because in this movie, the Kryptonians, right, they break out of the Phantom Zone, or they're released from the Phantom Zone, and Zod finds a world engine, a terraforming engine, on an outpost that the people on the outpost didn't think to use. Because they're all dead, which I thought was kind of funny. Because if I was on a planet and I saw a terraformer and a bunch of people dead, my first reaction would be, I guess the terraformer doesn't work or it's broken or something.
Yeah.
But that's just me. Anyway, that doesn't matter. Zod and his buddies wear these suits that they're basically spacesuits, right? To keep them in Kryptonian atmosphere. But they can jump around and throw trucks and stuff, and they're immune to rockets and bullets and stuff. Is that because Kryptonians are naturally more powerful than humans? Like, it would about have to be, because if it's from the sun's radiation, right, the radiation of a yellow sun, then they seem to be... They're not surprised, right, that Zod throws the truck and his reaction isn't like, whoa, didn't know I could do that. So I was just confused about who has powers. What is different from Superman? Like, is... When Zod takes off his breather, does that just let him have X-ray vision and heat rays out of his eyes? Or what? What's going on?
I don't know. This movie makes a classic mistake of it over-explains everything and then leaves itself open to a bunch of questions. Because, yeah, they spend way too much time talking about what gives Clark his powers. And then, yeah, the jumping and strength could be because Jor-El mentions that the gravity on Earth is weaker. So I would imagine that would just naturally make the Kryptonians be stronger since they're used to a stronger gravity. What I don't understand is why don't all the Kryptonians take off their suits as soon as they get to Earth? Like, they know they're not going to die, and if they're worried about adapting to the things, Zod makes it pretty clear that they can get pretty in shape in reasonably little time. So I don't understand why they don't all just break their suits and then, like, just beat the tar out of Superman that way. They just, you know, get all 10 of them and just really clobber him.
So maybe it would be so destructive we couldn't pack in all this lovely product placement for Sears and IHOP.
That's so true. There is a lot of product placement in the movie. Yeah, I don't have a lot of other thoughts on the movie. It's 12 years after the point. But do you have any comments on that final controversial choice to have Superman kill Zod? Do you have any strong reactions to this choice by Schneider and co?
Well, I just think it's just not very well done. I mean, before we can even talk about whether it's right for the character, I think it's not really set up very well. Like, Superman to this point has not expressed an unwillingness to kill people. He hasn't killed anyone yet, but he has not said, like, I have a no-kill rule the same way Batman does. Mm-hmm. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is that the way that it comes about is just so contrived.
Yeah.
And that's something that's true of a lot of what this movie, yeah. Like, Pa Kent's death is so contrived. What? But he dies in a tornado because he runs back for a dog. And Clark, the obvious choice to go get the dog, Pa Kent says, no, I'll get the dog. For no apparent reason, what's happening is the writers have decided on the moment before they've decided on how to get to that moment.
Yeah.
So they're working backwards from these things that they need to happen, and you end up with these contrivances where the plot is contorting itself in order to make things happen. And the same thing's happening here, because it hasn't been established that Superman finds killing distasteful or anything. Mm-hmm. Certainly, right, he's throwing Zod through buildings and he's not once stopping to wonder, maybe someone's in there. Maybe he can just hear that it's empty. I don't know. Yeah. But even the the way it happens is Zod is trying to laserize these people, and I guess heat vision can only be projected, like, directly out of your face, so you can't shift your eyes to the right and cut the family in half that way. You have to be looking right at them. Mm-hmm. But it's just, it just rings very hollow, because I'm thinking maybe Superman's just stupid, because he could have just slammed Zod into the ground or thrown him across the room, or you can fly, dude, just take off, just fly directly up and you're good. So even before we get to whether or not this is a good thing for Superman to do, I don't think that it's well set up. And the way that it happens is just so forced that Superman has a million other options.
Yeah.
And he either doesn't think of them, or maybe he's just murderous. Maybe, right, he's just screaming for Lois Lane's benefit, when in reality he's thinking, like, heck yeah, dude. That's what I was wanting to do this whole time. It does kind of remind me. Go ahead.
Well, he does kill Doomsday, too.
It's true. That's another thing that's very contrived. Perhaps give Wonder Woman the... Wonder Woman, you give Superman the lasso of truth. Superman, you give Wonder Woman the kryptonite spear. No one needs to die. Yeah. Bingo bango. It does remind me that another thing that this movie caught flack for was the amount of destruction in Metropolis, mm-hmm. and how many people died. And it's not one of those things where, right, Godzilla's stomping through a city, and you know on a somewhat subconscious level, well, a lot of people are dying here. But in this movie, right, you see bodies flying through the air, you see people getting destroyed in missiles, errant missiles, you hear screaming, and buildings are just coming down, and yeah, it's a bit much, dude.
Well, and there's an interesting choice to spend a fair amount of time with the Daily Planet crew in, like, a ground zero sort of way.
Barry White takes a long time to decide to leave the building.
Yeah, and so it's not just that, like, Godzilla, someone stampeding through buildings, and you're like, oh, there's probably still people in there. It's tough to evacuate a building that large. I mean, he's explicitly taking time out of the movie to show you people in path of the destruction, and I'm sure ultra pretentious. When I was reading reviews for this movie after I watched it, I found at least one humongous 5-star review that just, I didn't read all of it because I read the first 4 paragraphs and was just unbelieving in the amount of things the person was attributing to Snyder that I would question whether or not you can attribute that sort of thing to a person in a movie sort of sense. But I'm sure there's some people who have some crazy reason for why this amount of destruction is needed, the way of framing the destruction is
done.
Well,
wait, what did the review say?
I don't know. I didn't get to that. The review was like beat by beat. The first 2 paragraphs were about the choice to open the movie with Clark being born, and how that is emblematic of the humanism that this person sees in the film. That it's about the messiness of being a person compared to the cleanliness, and I don't know. They talked a lot about Plato's Republic and.
He's reading Plato.
He is reading
as
Plato.
A young child.
I'll give it this person. Although this feels similar to my film criticism professor saying that the fan being on at the beginning of Psycho is a thematic motif because the fan makes a slashing motion, and I'm like, yeah, I think there was just a fan. Although he claims
maybe people were just a little hot on set. Well, like, can we have a fan on here?
At the end of the movie, there's a fan in the background, and the fan is off at the end of the movie after the killer's caught. So, I don't know. Maybe I just think, you know, same old Reed, always stretching. Like, we gotta...
Hey.
I'm not Mr. Fantastic out here trying to reach for that. But anyway, that's I don't really have anything to say about the choice to have Superman kill someone. I agree with you. I think it's poorly done. The Pa Kent death, very contrived, ridiculous. Also looks bad. Like, it looks terrible. It doesn't look at all like there's an actual tornado. And yeah, I think the choice.
Well, they didn't have the guts to show him, right, get actually. He just gets consumed in a big cloud. They don't actually. Yeah. They didn't have the spine to show him get picked up and go flying through the air.
That would be crazy. But actually, the more I'm talking about this, you know what movie Snyder should do? He should do, like, an Invincible movie or something.
What's this now?
Invincible, like the comic book Invincible that has a show right now. I think
I
Snyder...
I don't think I'm familiar with that.
Oh, okay, interesting. Well, if you...
Oh, wait, is it the one with J.K. Simmons?
Yeah, as Omni-Man, yes, okay. That's Invincible.
Yeah, okay, I know what you're talking about. I haven't seen it, but I think I saw, like, a few frames of a trailer once.
Well, if you're familiar with the idea of it, I think Snyder would be, like, perfect for it, probably. But anyway, that's pretty much all of my thoughts on this movie. So, do you have anything else you want to say?
Yeah, I just want to say that for as much as I rag on Snyder's prioritizing what looks cool over what's actually emotionally resonant, I have to admit, he does have a good eye on him.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
There are some shots in this movie that are darn good, and some of them look like they're ripped straight out of the pages of a comic book. Hmm. Like the shot when Zod is in Superman's head or something.
Yeah.
And the shot of Superman in his suit standing on a pile of skulls with the sun, a giant sun in the background. Dude, that is 100% pure comic book splash page.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right?
Yes.
Am I right or am I right?
You're right. He's right.
Like, I could easily imagine that drawn in a comic book style with just a speech bubble of Zod saying, like, Krypton's foundations have to be built on something.
Yeah.
And that's... I like that when it works. In those moments when it's appropriate or when it's not distracting from the emotions, the tension, or anything, basically anything else of the movie, I think it works, and I think that Snyder, he does have that capacity to make cool images, to make things look cool, and he clearly understands how comic books work visually.
Hmm.
The one shot from Batman v Superman with the woman raising her hand up and Superman floating above her, slightly obscured by the sun. That's a comic book panel made, transitioned, transplanted onto celluloid.
Yeah.
Actually, I think that was probably filmed digitally. Although this movie does have an excessive film grain. My goodness.
I mean, yeah, we don't have to get into it because this is just relitigating things people have said for a decade, but... Yeah, the movie has a crazy film grain. The movie is so muted in its color scheme. I don't understand why. It doesn't seem like it helps anything. Certainly doesn't help the criticisms that the movie is overly somber and serious. But I'm ready to get to ratings here.
Let's do it to it.
Yeah, I think this rating might seem a little high given how critical I've been of the movie, but I'm going to give this like a 6.3 out of 10, and a part of it could just be because I'm nostalgic for this sort of era of DC movies, and it takes me back, and I have fond memories associated with the movie that aren't really because of the movie, they're just there. But I do think the movie is above mediocre. I think the fight scenes put it above that. I think the interesting choices it makes with Superman at the very least give you some food for thought coming off of the movie. It's very clear that there is a vision there, even though the vision is being hampered by choices that are made in the admittedly fantastic fight scenes. And it's just a mixed bag of a movie, and I would love to I'd love to see a movie where Snyder just gets everything to gel, because I think it would be an incredible movie. I just don't know if he's ever made a movie that does that. So 6.3, 6.4 out of 10 is going to be my rating here.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the closest we've come to Snyder Without Limits is probably the Snyder Cut of Justice League. And it's not a bad movie, right? Like, it's clearly bloated, it's clearly self-indulgent, but... And it's been a while since I've seen it, so maybe if I rewatch it, I wouldn't feel this way. But when I watch it for the first time, I remember saying to you afterwards that in light of that and what it sets up for what would have been Snyder's ultimate vision for where this DC universe would go, I was kind of like, I would not be not down for that after that movie. But
well, I've seen the like story, the like plan. There's one choice in particular that I think is just the stupidest thing and does give me pause every time I see people say no one understands these characters better than Snyder, because there's one choice in his plan that is just appalling, in my opinion.
You're talking about Batman and Lois Lane having an affair?
Yeah, and then Superman, like, killing the baby or something? That is off. That's terrible.
That's not the direction I would have gone. It's true. That I think that, again, we're really going, extending this intermission between Nathan's rating and my rating, but I feel like another area where Snyder is getting in his own way is just this childish focus on shock value, right? Like, he said that the whole thing about, like, people say that Batman's dark, but he's never been raped in a movie, or I don't know if we get demonetized for saying that. He's never been assaulted in a movie. That could happen in my movie. And I'm like, dude, people don't do that. People don't avoid that because they're soft. They avoid that because that's stupid.
Well, and,
and
this
it's pointless.
I mean, this is like in our 100th episode, we talked about artists pushing the envelope. And I profess the opinion that at this stage of movies, really the only way you can push the envelope is, in my opinion, by entering into stuff that's just in bad taste. Like, a lot of the stuff that the Terrifier series does that's pushing the envelope, I would argue, is just, offensively bad. Or just straight up offensive in the way it chooses to depict humans and things happening to humans. But anyway, Elliot, do you have a rating for this film?
Oh, yeah. We rate movies on this program. Yeah, I think this movie's not great. Okay, I didn't hate it. It didn't make me angry. But I feel like Snyder is... He's just letting it get away from him. And there's cool shots that's visually interesting at times, and the movie clearly understands how to make a good fight scene, but it doesn't understand how to make a compelling character or how to make good on the promise of a different, darker Superman. So the movie is just kind of compromised at a really fundamental level, and I'm going to have to give it a D+.
Wow. This brings us to our recommendations. I'm not going to spend super long on my recommendation, because I just think if you've seen the James Gunn Superman movie and you liked it, and you've seen Man of Steel and you felt some way about it, I would very much recommend go back, watch the original Christopher Reeve Superman movie. It is not perfect by any means. I think it starts a little slow, but Christopher Reeves is just absolutely fantastic as Superman. He is such a joy to watch. It is such a treat. It's also just a really interesting relic as, I think, basically the first comic book movie that we ever made, or certainly the most popular, earliest comic book movie. And so there's a lot of choices in it that are really interesting. And I think if you've never seen it and you're like my age, so you were not around when it originally came out, I think it would behoove you to go back, revisit this movie, get a bit of an appreciation for the cinematic history of the Superman character.
You know what, Snyder, who Snyder kind of reminds me of, as I've been thinking about it,
okay,
kind of reminds me of the guy who wrote the Boys comic.
Oh,
a little bit of the show.
Robert,
right?
Kirkman? Is it Kirkman?
I don't think that's right. I think his name is Grant something.
Yeah, I should know. Kirkman's the guy who wrote Invincible. I don't know.
Grant Morrison.
Grant Morrison, yes, of course. Yeah, I would agree. Snyder could probably do a pretty good version of The Boys.
Well, I don't know. That's a little excessive to me.
Well, it would be good in the sense that I think it would be a good adaptation. I think it would maintain everything that makes The Boys comic book terrible, so it would be a good adaptation.
Yeah, he and Grant and Zach have the same kind of immature sensibilities of, they're like, people are just so soft. Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, I can give that a tentative second. I think maybe you like that movie a bit more than me. It's not that I dislike it. There are parts of it that I dislike quite intensely. But ultimately, I do enjoy the movie, and I think that, yeah, it is absolutely carried by Christopher Reeve. So yeah, go ahead, give it a watch, see what you think. My recommendation, when you were running through characters that Zack Snyder may be a little bit more comfortable with, I thought of this character, but didn't mention it because I felt like that would spoil my recommendation. Because everyone really wants to keep the integrity of that secret.
Yeah.
That's going to be Dredd. I'm talking 2012 adaptation with Carl Urban. If you liked Superman or if you just in general liked your comic book movies to be darker, grittier, a little bit more edgy, even though I kind of hate that term, then you look no further than Dredd, because this is all of the grit you could ever ask for, all of the grimness of the dystopian future in which it takes place. If you didn't know, it's about a lawman in a dystopian future where most people live in these like massive skyscrapers and never leave them. And so he gets trapped in one and he's trying to fight his way out. So it's a very simple premise, but it has got the cool factor. Like, Carl Urban, he as a man, has the cool factor. And he absolutely has the titanium jawline that it takes to pull off a character whose face is mostly mask and jaw. So it's got some great action sequences. It's just, yeah, it will scratch the itch of the gruff, no-nonsense taking B.A.
Don't curse, we get demonetized.
I know, I'm not. Cool guy energy, very much in the vein of your Clint Eastwoods. That's actually the only one I can think of right now. But so if you like your comic book movies, I'm just repeating myself. Dredd is my recommendation.
Great. I'm more of a Sylvester Stallone Dredd guy.
Interesting.
I'm just kidding. I haven't seen either of those, but it's probably pretty good. Everyone else thinks it's really good. That movie is very oft recommended. So,
well,
yep.
If you don't like it, life is hard and full of disappointments. What can
there
I tell
you
me?
Go. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to
say
this.
Say the line, Bart.
Jumbo episode. This ended up much longer than our usual episodes, but there's a lot of meat to chew on. send us an email. Are you in the camp of this is the greatest version of Superman and Snyder is just so far ahead of the curve, he's on the other side of the planet? Do you think this is terrible? What do you think? Send us an email. We love to get those. Send us an email if you have a request for a movie you want us to watch. We're going to try. We should be back next week with another brand new movie that we'll be reviewing. Look forward to that. And in the meantime, have a great week.